Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone joining us here for This Week with Dr. T. Each week, we get together with amazing guests and have conversations that are both interesting, informative, and inspiring. If you missed some of these great discussions, you can find several years worth if you are a premium podcast member. Go to drtenpenny.com, hover over the podcast tab. There, that is where you can log in if you're a member or where you can join if you're not a member. You will see four different membership levels. We believe we've developed something for everyone's time and budget. So sit tight. We'll be right back. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water, because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. Well, welcome back, everyone. Let me introduce to you today's special guest, private investigator and author, Susan Daniels. Susan Daniels, author of The Rubbish Hauler's Wife versus Barack Obama, is a true story of her life, starting from an unimaginable childhood to the murder of her husband, a rubbish hauler, by a Cleveland gangster named Danny Green. I was telling her before we got started, it's interesting to read about Cleveland because that's where I am. She found herself widowed at the age of 30. With seven small children, the oldest being 10. Upon her husband's death, the secret of his second family was splashed all over the news media, alienating friends and making it difficult in her own family. With only a high school education, she's left with no money, but as a strong woman, she raised her children and moved on to become a private investigator at the age of 53. She then stumbled upon Barack Obama's biggest secret. For his entire life, he's been using a stolen Social Security number issued in Connecticut. Using her investigative skills, she discovered a copy of Barack Obama's 2009 tax return that was published by the White House and clearly showed the Connecticut Social Security number that he is illegally using. Daniels filed a lawsuit against Obama's Ohio candidacy in 2012 with the goal of forcing him to reveal his true origins and identity. She tried to enlist the aid of high-ranking Republicans, none of whom would acknowledge what she was doing. That's how Susan learned the hard facts about the Uni Party in Washington, D.C. Now, at the age of 81, my gosh, wait, doesn't she look? She looks like she's 41. I'm telling you, she shares her amazing journey from personal heartache to challenging at the highest levels of power in the United States government. Susan, welcome so much to This Week with Dr. T. Wow, what a story. What motivated you to start with by looking at his tax returns?
Actually, that was toward the end.
Let's skip that then, and let's go back to the beginning. You know, your whole story, because this is her book. It's very, very interesting. I mean, it just reads like a riveting suspense novel, but it's a true story of her life. You know, of all the things that she was doing, it was really challenging. I mean, and I have to tell you, share a little personal story here. You know, reading the story about your husband being murdered and all the things that happened in your family and with his girlfriend that's been going on for a long time, and then his ex-wife that was still in the picture with her two kids. You know, today is the 10-year anniversary of my husband's death. So I could very much relate to you about, you know, the things that you went through during that period of time. So why don't you start with that part of your story and tell us about that?
Well, as you can imagine, it was a complete surprise. I wake up one morning as the wife and mother of seven, And hours later, I'm a widow. And hours after that, I was down at the Cleveland Police Department being accused of being involved in his death. It was the worst part was trying to tell my children that their father was dead. And then it got worse after that. I mean, the little kids, the little ones didn't even understand because the youngest one was 14 months and the next one was, you know, three and then four. And the four-year-old kind of understood. The older kids just went to pieces. And then when all the bad things started coming out in the newspaper about that I had hidden, because I never wanted it to come out about his girlfriend and their five children together. It was just horrible. And, but life goes on and you know, you put one foot in front of the other. I said, what else are you going to do?
Yeah. You know, what else are you going to do? Really?
When there are no options, you know, life is wonderful when there are no options. Because you just keep going forward then.
Well, I guess you got a whiteboard. You can draw anything that you want on it. How did you decide to become a private investigator?
You know what? As you'll see in the book, I've had a number of jobs through the years. And I tend to get fired from jobs because I kind of speak what I think. And I cannot stand, you know, I can't stand cheating and lying and deception. And I'm not really good at that. So I spoke up too many times. I was unemployed and somebody I knew called and said they had a friend that needed some help. And they knew that I had been working nights at the Plain Dealer for many, many years. I covered things like council meetings, which, you know, I hope somebody kills me if I ever have to cover another council meeting. Because I did it 2 or 3 nights a week for 17 years.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I had to because I needed the money. I needed the extra money. And somebody called and said, and they knew I would have access to the Plain Dealer Library. So, and the reporters were friends of mine. So they said, well, I know a guy who's a retired FBI agent that's looking for help. Are you interested? And I said, oh, yeah, absolutely. I can do that. And found that I was very good at it. And within 2 years, I got fired from that job and started my own company.
Well, good for you. So how long have you, so it's been 30 years. Are you still working as a private investigator?
Oh, yeah. I just renewed my license last year. It'll be 32 years this year.
My goodness. So, you know, obviously, and we're going to talk about it in a little bit, you know, this discovery of Obama's Social Security number. But what were some of the other things along the way that you found that were just like aha moments?
With you mean as an investigator?
Yeah.
Oh, they were not related in any way to politics. A lot of political stuff has come since I started looking at Obama. I was never inclined to be involved in politics till one of my clients wanted me to do a background on him. And I said, you know, he's already a president. I'm not going to find anything on him. And I said, but, all right, I'll try just to humor, because it's a good friend. I'll humor him. And the first thing you know is I find the Social Security number, which I verify a dozen different ways until I know that I know what I'm talking about, and was stunned. I could not believe it. But from the instant I pulled it up on my screen, and I have access to databases that people would not normally have access to, but I've been licensed by the state of Ohio all these years. And so I have these proprietary databases. And the minute I put in was Barack Obama, Illinois, and up pops the Social Security number. And I instantly, because I had done the work for so long, instantly knew it was a fraud. He should have had a number that started with 575 or 576, which were the numbers assigned to people living in Hawaii. But it came up 042. And I knew that that was an East Coast number. Well, it didn't take me long to realize that it was a Connecticut number. And I thought, and it said it was issued in 77. Well, I knew he was a 15-year-old at high school in Hawaii. I just, none of it made sense. And I went from there.
And what else, and where did that take you?
Well, it took me, first of all, it stymied me for about the first 3 months because I thought, now what do I do with this?
Sure. It's like having a hot potato in your hand. What do I do with this?
It's like, oh my God, what do I do? And then it's like, you got to do something because this is really, really important. And then I thought, you have 7 children. How is this going to impact their lives? Now, of course, they're all adults by this time, but I was worried about what would happen. Yeah, because I see how the government goes after people. Case in point. Anyhow, I contacted my counsel or congressman, who I had known years before he ever became a congressman, and he totally ignored me. And I couldn't believe it. And on the fifth time I attempted, I pretty much told him what a jerk I thought he was for ignoring me. And he wrote back and said, I can't be bothered with people who talk to me like that. So it's like, okay, now what? So then I started contacting other people in Congress. And I contacted the big name people, like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, and Trey Gowdy was a big name then. This is still around 2010 and 2011. I'm trying everything that I can think of. WorldNet Daily, I did contact them, and they did write a story, and a couple other people started picking up on stories. But in 2012, I thought, I'm going to do this. So I filed a lawsuit against him I live in Geauga County, in Geauga County Court. I had an 18-page, I did this pro se because I couldn't afford an attorney. A friend of mine, though, who was a lawyer, helped me with the 18-page part of the complaint. But I then attached 83 pages of proof.
Wow.
Of what wow. I said. Yeah. I said, I'm not going to let these people pretend I don't know what I'm talking about. So I had all this documentation that showed that I knew exactly what I was talking about. And we had a hearing. I had sued the Secretary of State because he's the one that controls elections. And I got no response from them. There was a hearing set. I went to court, and nobody showed up from the state. And it all became very clear very quickly why. And the judge says, the judge Republican, keep in mind, there is Secretary of State. Everybody's Republican in this, including me. And the judge was just as nasty as he could be. He said, well, nobody showed up, so we can either wait and reschedule or we can go ahead. And I knew reschedule meant cancel immediately. So I said, no, let's go ahead. And he was as nasty as he could be to me. Everything I said, he challenged me on. And then I wanted to add, one more document, which was an affidavit from the writer Jack Cashel. Because Jack Cashel had written, had done background on Obama for 4 years for a book he wrote about Obama. And I asked him to write an affidavit saying that Obama never lived in Connecticut, which he would have had to have been living there to get that Social Security number at that time. And the judge would not let me do it. He kept saying, well, is it evidence? And I said, well, it's an affidavit. And he kept saying louder, is it evidence? And I said, it's an affidavit. And after he said it the third time, I'm standing there alone. And I'm thinking, maybe these words are interchangeable. And I said, well, maybe it is. And he said, dismissed, gets off the bench and leaves.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't realize till later, and I should have. It's my own fault. I should have realized that nothing is evidence until it's accepted by the court.
Oh, wow.
And this is where I knew that the whole deal had been worked out in advance. 3 days later, the judge filed a dismissal. But in this four-page dismissal, it said, I made a mistake because I thought that an inappropriate Social Security disqualified somebody. And that's in the dismissal that an inappropriate Social Security number would disqualify somebody from running. And I thought this was written before we even had that hearing. And he told everybody at the state, don't bother showing up.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Wow is right.
Is there still something that you can do with that information? I mean, it is an election year.
There's a site called American Thinker.
Yes.
And I frequently have stuff on there about Obama. In fact, I've had stuff lately about Michael Byrd, the guy who shot and killed Ashley Babbitt on January 6th. And he's a total creep who has owed $56,000 in income tax since 2019. So I'm in the process of filleting him because everything stinks. You know, it's not just Obama. It's now the idea that Michelle might be the candidate. We cannot have a felon in the White House, and using a stolen number is a felony. And Obama got away with it all those years, and everybody knew.
Yeah, I did an interview. I'm blanking on the name right now, but it was last fall. I did an interview with the author of the book, Michelle Obama 2024.
Joel Gilbert.
Yes, thank you. And I did an interview with him on This Week, like what we're doing here now, and about his documentary and all the research and everything that he's done, that he's absolutely convinced that Michelle Obama is, and he's been writing about it and talking about it for quite a while, that she's going to be the walk-on candidate as soon as Biden declares that he's no longer going to run. She's going to like slip right in on the back door.
Well, you'll find this interesting. Joel Gilbert designed the cover of my book.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Joel and I have been friends for years.
Oh, very good. Well, thank you for doing that. So for our listeners that are listening here, you can go back into the archives. If you're a premium podcast member, it was from last year. Joel Gilbert and I, we did a two-part series. We did a This Week with Dr. T, and we also did a deep dive like we're going to do here with Susan in just a few minutes for our premium podcast members. And because it is an election year, it might be really, really good for you to go back and listen to that interview and get his book and know what we're going to be up against here in a few more weeks.
He has a video too.
A documentary. Yeah.
And it's wonderful. It's amazing how horrible she is. She treated Black people in Chicago. It was just terrible. And people need to know before she starts trotting herself out as a candidate.
And as a pro-Black, I'm a Black woman who's pro-Black people, and she's not at all.
One of the worst racists in the country.
Wow. Have you taken your information to like Fox News or, American News?
They don't care. Nobody wants to hear from me.
Not even Tucker Carlson.
I don't know how to, you know what? I tried everything to find an email for him or access to him. And out of desperation, I mailed one of my books to his fishing camp in Maine last summer. And I thought, you know, it'll probably get tossed and never heard a word.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I would think that he would be interested in this.
This is and particularly this year bigger than ever, because most of us who are patriots and have paid attention and are awake, not woke, you know, yes, that we're awake, have known that this has been Obama's third term, you know, pulling the strings behind the scenes, he and Susan Rice on Biden's entire campaign and his entire administration. And so now if we in with Joe Gilbert, one of the things he said was that every single thing that Obama did to get elected, Michelle's doing the exact same things, following the same steps.
Right. So the Democratic playbook.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously, so you can't get anybody to get your attention on this item.
No, the best I've done is you know, the book is doing actually quite well on Amazon. And I did a number of interviews, you know, a while back. But I, as a matter of fact, I told Joel, I said, you know, Joel, I can't wait until she actually comes out as the candidate. I said, because I intend to ride your coattails on this. And he said, and he laughed and he said, yeah, it, you know, it's just a natural that I follow whatever he's doing with what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't have a felon in the White House again a second time. You know,
you know, the thing that's so disheartening is that they all knew that he was not a legitimate candidate. And you will see in my book, I even speculate on where I believe he was born. And he was not born in Kenya, and he was not born in Hawaii, because there are only two hospitals in Hawaii where he could have been born, and neither one of them will claim him.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. He originally, he on the 100th anniversary of the Kapiolani Hospital, he sent them a congratulatory letter, and they have no plaques up. You know, he says, I was born there. No, he wasn't. They would have a plaque up if a president was born, especially Hawaii, such a small state.
Yeah, really true. That's really very, very true.
Yeah, the way I did it is I had a copy of his, allegedly his father's immigration file. Now, I'm not convinced Barack Obama Sr. is his father at all. Joel Gilbert thinks that Frank Marshall Davis is his real father. I tend to agree. But in the immigration file for his father, which is quite interesting, is a letter. It's an interview between Senior and an immigration authority there. And in the letter, it says that his wife is pregnant. Well, they were never married. They were never married, but he refers to as his wife, and that she is contacting the Salvation Army to give the baby up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were going to give him up for adoption. Well, I started thinking about it. I thought, where would she have gone? Because nobody in Hawaii ever saw her pregnant. She was never pregnant while she was there. She came, they moved from Mercer Island in the state of Washington outside of Seattle the week after she graduated from high school. And I thought, and then she showed up there with a two-week-old baby after she had him in August. She was, it was around August of 61. He was born August 4th, 61. And I started thinking, maybe she went back to Seattle. Where else would she go? She just came from there. She'd been there since she had been a kid. There was no place else to go. So I started looking for Salvation Army homes in the area. And I found one in Vancouver, British Columbia. It was about 140 miles away from Mercer Island, a bus ride from Mercer Island. And that's where I believe he was born. Now, the whole thing about her wanting to give the baby up is very interesting, because they would do blood tests on all the babies. People did not want mixed race babies, and it wasn't black babies they didn't want. They didn't want Inuit babies. So any baby that was not 100% white, they would not put up for adoption. So even if she had wanted to give the baby up, she would not have been allowed to.
Hmm.
And that's how I think she showed up with a two-week-old baby on Mercer Island outside of Seattle.
Interesting.
Which means he was never, people tried to say, well, but she's an American, so he was an American. No, the law then was, if a woman gave birth outside of this country, she would have to be 5 years past the age of 14. His mother was 4 years and 9 months past the age of 14. He would not, if I'm correct in my assumption of where he was born, he would either be British, because that's what his father was, because Kenya was still a protectorate at that time, or Canadian. But he would not have been an American. He would never have been an American and would never have qualified as president of this country.
Wow. This is such important information. I mean,
it is
in the global picture of where we are in the history of our country, and also with this being an election year, it's blockbuster material, Susan. It really is.
It really is. And I, you know, my guess about where he was born, I mean, it is a guess, but it's pretty solid background information, you know. And anything else I say about him, I have a document. I can prove anything I say. You know, I didn't want to get sued. You know, I didn't want to lose my license. So,
wow.
This is important stuff.
Why do you suppose, I mean, of all the little Black kids born in America, during that, how was he the chosen one? How did they choose him?
His grandparents worked for the CIA. His mother worked for the CIA. Frank Marshall Davis worked for the CIA. They were all corrupt. When his mother lived in Indonesia for years, she was working for, they were fronts for the CIA. USAID and the Ford Foundation were CIA fronts. And that's who she worked for.
Wow.
And nobody cares. It drives me crazy.
I'm sure it does.
It does.
I'm sure it really, really super does.
It does.
Because this is just critically important information, and particularly where our country is with all of this woke stuff that's going on now. It's just terrible. And, you know, I remember when Obama was running for office the first term, I got sucked in like a lot of people did. You know, because he's a great orator. He can really deliver a speech.
He can read a teleprompter.
But his delivery is such that, you know, it was really good. And then but the thing that really bothered me was, you know, the tail flag on his airplane was just hope and change. And I kept talking, and he kept saying over and over again, we have hope that we're going to have change. We're going to have change. And I got to thinking, change isn't always good. And what changes is he proposing? And then the rest is history, you know?
Yeah, I never fell for him at all. I saw him for, you know, he was the Black version of Bill Clinton. He was just another snake oil salesman. And I saw it right from the start. And that's probably why I was enthusiastic about looking into his background, hoping to find something, not expecting to.
Oh, well said. Very well said of how that is. So what are you investigating right now?
Mostly business itself is very slow for private investigators now. People don't have money. We're a luxury. You know, I used to do a lot of work for law firms. I still do. But right now I'm still going after Obama. I'm still looking for anything I could find. I'm now going after Michael Bird and anything I can find on him. I'm not done with Obama. I really haven't spoken that much about where I thought he was born. You're one of the first times, but I intend to write something about that. You know, if I can get some more things published on American Thinker, because people read that a lot. And I'm not done with him. And let Michelle Obama come in. I'll join sides with Joel Gilbert as much as I can and do as much harm as I can, because the country has been lied to and cheated. It's not right. And not only that, the other thing that's in the book that's really important is that whole I killed bin Laden thing. That was all theatrics.
Well, hold that thought right there. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. We're talking today about Obama's history, and we're talking with Susan Daniels, who is who's the author. I looked down here because this is her book. This is her book, which is The Rubbish Hauler's Wife versus Barack Obama. You can find this on Amazon. Please go and read it. It's very well written. It's a really compelling story. It reads like just a suspense thriller, which it is. And it's a true story about her life, what she's found. So hold on for just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our Opti line, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast, when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store. All right. Well, welcome back, everyone. Thank you for being here with us today. This is so interesting. I'm so glad to hear you say that you're not done with this. Yes, that's really, really compelling. I want to go back to the beginning of your story because, people don't know your story because if they haven't read this book yet. And let's talk about the gangster thing and the trial and everything that happened in Cleveland way back when your husband was murdered.
Yeah, Danny Green had a terrible reputation. He is a known gangster, but my husband had a rubbish company, and he was really quite amazing. When I met him, he had only been in business for a year. He had two small children that I helped raise because their mother was in jail. And I had those children for 3.5 years. His son was the most incorrigible 5-year-old I had ever met. And his daughter, who was born in prison, had cerebral palsy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I didn't realize this at first because I started taking care of her when she was only about 4 months old. That's when I first met him. I met him through his family. I had babysat a lot as a teenager. So I kind of knew what to expect from babies, but she was not progressing. And when I took her for a 6-month checkup, I said to the doctor, something is not wrong or is wrong here. I said, she's not sitting up. She's not holding her head up very well. He just goes, oh, she's got cerebral palsy. And I was just stunned at how cruel he was, the way he said it. I mean, that was just it. And I went home and I told my husband, and he said, no. And I said, yeah. And she never walked. She just died about 3 years ago in her late 50s and had been in a nursing home. When her mother got out of jail, she had her for a while, but then she spent probably from the age of 4.5 or 5 on into a nursing home until her late 50s.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. What are you going to do? So anyhow, I had those kids. My husband, he grew this huge company in 10 years. And was the third largest company in the city of Cleveland. Well, the rubbish haulers, the legitimate rubbish haulers, were having a problem with these guys that would own a truck and would go around and pick up trash and then go dump it somewhere on a city corner in a vacant lot or something. So they got together and decided that Danny Green would come in and he would help organize these fly-by-night rubbish haulers. And it became apparent, and he had been friends with my husband before this for several years. One of my children was even named Danny after him because they were such good friends. But he started using some very, very bad tactics. He was intimidating people. He was causing truck fires, and my husband wanted nothing more to do with it. They had formed a guild of rubbish haulers, but my husband said this ends right now. He backed out of the guild, which immediately made him an enemy of Danny Green, because Danny Green was getting paid by all these haulers to organize things. Well, he wasn't organizing. He was threatening and doing dangerous things. So they all pulled out. The money stopped to Danny Green, and my husband immediately became an enemy. And from then on, very quickly, for the next 4 or 5 months, the nonstop threats on my husband, on his life. And eventually Danny Green did kill him.
And then there was a trial?
Yes. They charged him with manslaughter. And what I didn't find out until 15 years later is that there was never going to be a conviction, because Danny Green was an FBI informant at the time when he killed my husband. So there was a trial, and I testified, and the judge took it away from the jury because he said the prosecutor had not proven his case. And he had not. And I'll tell you why. Because they used the newest, youngest prosecutor they had for this extremely important trial, because they didn't want him convicted. It was a setup from the start. And it took me 15 years to find out what had happened.
Wow, you really had some incredible experiences in your life. Not so good with the government.
No, not so good. not so good. But you know what? As we said before, life's easy when you have no options. You keep going forward. It's the only option you have. Somebody once asked me, did you ever think about running away? And I stopped dead. I said, I didn't know that was an option.
Oh, that's good. And how's your family doing now? All of your children with all of this things that you've had?
They're, I don't talk about them in the book. I don't talk about them generally. They're doing well. I have 6 grandchildren, 4 great grandchildren. Everybody's fine. There's never been a divorce in the family. Everybody's been married forever, which is a good thing. And you know what? Our family's like every family. We ups and downs and argue, and we're just a typical family, but my kids are never forget each other's birthdays. They always make a point of an email, a phone call, or something. And you know what, I like that part of it.
That's, I think, really that, cool. Do they all live kind of in Northeast Ohio, or
no, only one? The thing I wanted was my kids. My children grew up in Kirtland, Ohio, very lovely place, but it's a place where a lot of kids never left. You would go off to college and they would come back and they would buy their parents' house and they were stuck. And I didn't want that for my children. So I encouraged them. A couple of my kids went off as foreign exchange students when they were in high school, which I intentionally wanted them. I wanted them to see there's a big world, and they are spread all over the country.
Wow.
That's what I wanted for them. I didn't want them stuck like I saw other people do.
That's such a testament to the type of woman that you are and how strong you've been through all of this. That's really, congratulations on that. It's really wonderful.
It's just something I had to do. There's a reason there are no statues built to me. I have none coming. I just do what I had to do.
Right before the break, you made you were starting to talk about in a passing comment about the death of Osama bin Laden. and how that whole thing was all set up. Let's explore that a little bit and what you found about that.
Well, I found out that Osama bin Laden died on December 16th, 2001, not in 2011. He died in the Tora Bora Mountains of kidney disease. He died. They wanted to make it look like they had to keep up the fraud of him being alive so that the Bush could, the Bush machine could keep up the, we have to continue this war that we're in, you know, because it was financially good for people like Cheney and his company, you know, that whole war was a joke. I found an article in a Pakistani newspaper clipping, and it had a story about Osama bin Laden dying on December 11, 2011, and there was a death notice, and a death notice was in Arabic. So I hired a company in Florida to translate it for me. I later found articles in a French newspaper called Le Figaro, and they had the same story, but they had the translation of the death certificate, and it was identical to the one that I had paid to have done. And they told about when he had died, and it told how 30 people were at the funeral, and it was that was held in the Tora Bora Mountains. And I started doing all this research, and in the book there's a whole chapter on it. Obama admits himself that they never saw bin Laden at this house in Abbottabad, where he was supposed to have been killed. You know, there was that whole theater. Yes, the helicopters went in. They didn't talk much about the one that crashed because the tail hit this huge fence around the complex where he was supposed to be living. They don't mention that a number of SEALs died there either. You know, the government leaves out the things that they don't want people to know, but he was never there. Some of the books that were written by people that were in the Obama administration admit, well, we never really saw him there. We saw some men walking around the compound at night, but none of them were him. Well, bin Laden was 6'4". And like 140 pounds. I mean, you would spot him a mile away. Most men over there are not that tall. And they said, we never saw him, but we thought there was a 50-50 chance. And I have these quotes in my book, and I'm quoting people in the Obama administration directly from their books. They never saw him there. They never knew he was there. They did kill somebody. And one of the neighbors said they killed the owner of the house, and mm-hmm. they load this body up, and they go off to the USS Carl Vinson. And I have in the book the communications between CENTCOM and the ship, talking about the helicopters are on their way, except they talk about it being a FedEx delivery. I started doing this because somebody I knew told me his son-in-law was a sailor on that ship, and they made all 5,000 sailors go below deck before the helicopters came. And that's even in the CENTCOM communications, because they're very concerned about whether any sailors see what happened. And they're told no, and there were only 10 or 12 people there that saw the body dumped into the sea. And the minute I heard that the sailors had been forced below deck, it's like, why would they do that? They would want the biggest audience they could have. They're throwing Osama bin Laden off the deck of the ship. And it wasn't that way at all. They made 5,000 men go below deck. It's like, this doesn't make any sense at all.
So that nobody could identify the fact that it was not Osama bin Laden?
Right. Because in a body bag, you would be able to tell a 6'4" man from a 5'10" one.
Yeah. Oh, you know? My goodness.
And then the other thing is that they did is, and it was in violation of everything the government says about keeping records. 2 years after the alleged killing of Osama bin Laden, Admiral McCraven had all photos, all records, all everything destroyed about this attack. The whole thing was done because Obama's polling numbers were falling dramatically. People were disenchanted with him. He needed a big ta-da. And that was the, I killed Osama bin Laden. He rode that back into the White House for a second term.
Wow. Oh, this information is just so important, Susan. It's just so important. I'm glad that you're keeping on digging and digging into all of these different things. You know, I wonder, have you tried to get this information to President Trump?
He knows it. I talked to Michael Cohen, his attorney, 3 times before Trump went into office, and told him about the lawsuit I had filed, which included all the documents. And Michael Cohen had me send them to him. No, Trump's aware of all of this.
Wow. That's amazing.
Disheartening.
Disheartening. Yeah, that's the correct word. Very disheartening.
Well, but I can understand because the country, it's the whole black white thing. You don't want to look like you're going after somebody because they're black. You know, it's a shame. They let the truth disappear.
Languish.
Yes.
Languish.
But I'm still trying to get it out there. You know, everybody who buys the book is going to read about why I think the way I do and what I can do to prove it.
Well, I want to mention one more time, in case you missed it the first time, it's The Rubbish Hauler's Wife versus Barack Obama, a true story by Susan Daniels. And you can get this off of Amazon. It's not real thick, so it won't take you a terribly long time to read. You know, sometimes I do interviews with guests and their books are like tomes.
Yes.
But this is a well-written, it reads like a suspense thriller. It's a very good book. I strongly encourage all my readers to follow up and to get this book to support Susan and her cause. And if you've got connections to various different people, I got a few connections I want to talk to you about offline. We've got just a couple of minutes left in our interview today. Is there anything in particular you'd like to leave our audience with?
Just how happy I am to meet you.
Oh, thank you.
I admire so much you because you stick to the truth. You follow. You don't give up. You know, I admire that in people who are not afraid of their own convictions and stand up for them, no matter what the response is going to be or what the punishment is going to be. And I'm just really happy to meet you.
Well, thank you so much. That's so kind for you to say. So, Susan, I'm so grateful and honored for the generosity of your time here this morning. I've learned so many things. And I will admit to my audience, I'm about halfway through this book and I can't wait to read the rest of it. It's really well written and I've really been enjoying it. So it was such a pleasure to be able to actually speak with you here today about this book and about what you're doing. And if there's anything that I can do to help you or Joel Gilbert to get this information out in this election year, please, you know, reach out, tap back to me, and I'll do what I can to help. Susan, I forgot to ask you, do you have, other than your book on Amazon, do you have a website?
It's a simple one, page one. It's just SusanDanielsPI.com.
Well, and also if anybody needs some private investigative work done,
to reach out to you.
You can go through her website and all those things. Like if you want people to be investigated, now's a really good time to do it. So let me just tell you what some things that are coming up this week. This is Monday morning, and so it's Monday night is tonight on my Bridie on TV show, The 10 Penny Files on Your Health. Each week we bring you special guests to talk about specific topics to improve your health and well-being. You won't want to miss any of these live discussions. So join us at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on BridieOn.tv for a discussion on your health. Tuesday morning, 9 a.m., remember to join me live with Morning Coffee with Dr. T. It's an open forum question and answer time at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We send out through our email list. If you're not a member of our email, please go to drtembity.com and join. We'll send out a way for you can register, and then you can ask questions specifically. Tuesday night, happy hour with Dr. T, where we discuss Bible and Bible verses, like things like Bible prophecy and things like, and we invite in special guests, authors, pastors, professional Christians, business people to get together to have a lively discussion and then have a prayer together. Thursday night is happy hour with me this month for the month of January. And then beginning in February, we're doing a 4-part deep dive on Bible eschatology with Dr. Justin Prock. Now, these are all pre-recorded on my end for my convenience. Plus, Justin lives in South Korea. So we had to come up with a time that was a convenient for us to talk. And so I've already recorded these and they will blow your mind. So mark your calendar for Thursday night, 6 p.m. Eastern time in February. You know, mark that off. And if you're a premium podcast member, you will have a lifetime access to those. 7 o'clock on Thursday night is also Critically Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P. So as we close out today, I want to say a special thank to our sponsors and thank you to everyone who joins us here this week. And most importantly, thank you so much, Susan Daniels, for joining us here today and for your unrelenting work to get the word out about the fraud that of what the Obamas are delivering to our country. So with that, I want to close with one of my favorite verses in the Bible. I close all my broadcasts, whether they're live or pre-recorded, with Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until the next time, remember to lean to God, trust Him for everything. He will never let you down. So have a good week, everyone, and God bless.
In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.